You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second and final of two podcasts on Precision Medicine, MCRC, Mastering the Application of Testing to Personalize Treatments for Better Patient Outcomes, hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Vaidehi, and I will be the host of today's podcast. This series is designed to meet the educational needs of community oncologists, oncology nurses, and nurse practitioners. In the previous episode, we spoke about the feasibility and importance of comprehensive molecular testing in MCRC and the role of MTB in treatment planning. This podcast will focus on understanding key clinical efficacy and safety data for recently approved targeted therapies and immunotherapies, and how there is emerging evidence for their use in earlier treatment settings. Joining me today are Dr. Stacy Cohen and Dr. Antonia Sepulveda. Dr. Cohen is Associate Professor, Clinical Research Division at the Fred Hutch Cancer Center and Associate Professor, Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of Washington in Seattle, Washington. Dr. Sepulveda is Chair and Professor, Department of Pathology, and Ralph E. Louis Professor of Oncology, GW Cancer Center, George Washington University, School of Medicine and Health Sciences in Washington, D.C. Doctors, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So in the last podcast, our focus was on molecular testing. And in this podcast, I'd like the two of you to discuss newly approved as well as emerging therapies in MCRC. Dr. Cohen, would you like to start by walking us through therapies for stage 4 MCRC?
Absolutely. So as you know, you heard on our last podcast, it's not straightforward. It's definitely complicated, but I think there's some clear pathways and hopefully I can help break that down a little bit. So when you think about a patient who has newly diagnosed metastatic colorectal cancer and you've done your full complete molecular workup, you have done a good staging scan and you have a good idea of where the cancer is, what the cancer is, the first question, which is a real hard stop now, is do they have microsatellite instability in their tumor? And that needs to be known above and beyond before anything else is begun. And I say that because those patients, the preferred treatment is immunotherapy. So for all the other subtypes, we are going to be using a chemotherapy backbone and playing around with the different types of targeted therapies or the intensity of the chemotherapy that we're using. But for an MSI high cancer, we're only going to be using immunotherapy. So that is one of those molecular tests that I will wait to get the result on before I would actually start therapy. Once you know that someone is MSS and they need chemotherapy, you're going to be checking for, do they have a left-sided or right-sided primary? And then you're going to be looking at the molecular profile. So now if someone has a BRAF V600E mutation and their microsatellite stable, then the recommendation would be FOLFOX with encorafenib and cetuximab. If they're wild type for BRAF, their microsatellite stable, then again, you're looking at the sidedness. If they are left-sided and RAS-RAF wild type and HER2 is not amplified, then you have the option of a doublet chemotherapy, meaning FOLFOX or FOLFIRI, and you can add an anti-EGFR therapy, or you could use a doublet with bevacizumab, or you could even use the triplet with bevacizumab if you wanted. However, if they're left-sided and RAS mutant, you cannot use anti-EGFR therapy. You know that's not going to work. So you would use your doublet or triplet with bevacizumab. And if they're right-sided, then we know anti-EGFR therapy is also less preferred. So regardless of the RAS-RAF status, we're still going to use a doublet or triplet with bevacizumab. And so this comes from a number of different clinical trials, but what we've learned is that whichever chemotherapy regimen you give first seems to be most effective. So whether you start with FOLFOX or FOLFIRI, you're going to end up switching for second-line therapy. And so we have data saying that really whichever combination is given first is more effective than whichever one someone receives second. Now we also, as I mentioned, have the triplet FOLFIRINOX, and so that complicates things a little bit further. But all in all, I would say we have a lot of different combinations and you're going to be tailoring it to the individual person, but that first hard stop is definitely figuring out if they have MSI high status or not. But Antonia, maybe we could discuss some combinations.
Yes. Thank you, Stacy. There's a lot going on, as you said. So, and as you mentioned, the location of the primary tumor should definitely be considered for first-line therapies when tumors are KRAS wild type. So data came from the called BSWOG 80405 study that compared Beva versus cetuximab in first-line KRAS wild-type colorectal cancer. And this study found that the anti-EGFR cetuximab had lower efficacy for tumors of the right colon, whereas it had better outcomes than Beva in tumors of the left colon. So it's preferred for left-sided colons that are KRAS wild-type. But then another study, the PARADIGM trial, provided additional information and essentially confirmed that inhibiting EGFR is better than inhibiting VEGF for left-sided KRAS wild-type metastatic colorectal tumors. But the impact of outcomes was further improved by knowing additional molecular status on those tumors. And in that trial, the tumors were particularly characterized for RAS, RAF, HER2, P10, EGFR, MET, RET, and TRK, all essentially all the genes we've been talking about that we test generally using next-generation sequencing panels.
And I think you described that well, and it was really not as practice-changing as I thought it was going to be. You know, when we finished 80405, we all thought that we figured out that left-sided RAS-RAF wild type, it was going to benefit from anti-EGFR. So when they restricted the PARADIGM study to that, I think folks thought it was going to be more impressive than it was. And the fact that the, you know, progression-free survival and overall survival curves don't really separate until after someone's off first-line therapy, I think it really tells us that we don't exactly know what's going on in this population, that there's more than the standard gene mutations, and that's really where the interest is in this negative hyperselection patient population. But even then, with overall survival, we didn't see a separation for almost 2 years. So certainly, I think it's more complicated than we'd like it to make it out to be. And then, you know, adding to that is the fact that we now have the triplet. So I talked about this already, but we have TRIBE2 study, which did FOLFOXIRI bevacizumab. In the United States, we refer to it as FOLFIRINOX, recognizing that we give a slightly different dose than was being done in Italy. But that one really showed improved progression-free and overall survival for using upfront triplet therapy, still using maintenance, but both in first progression, second progression, PFS2, and also overall survival. So I will say that I have changed my practice to offering this to more patients upfront if I feel like they can tolerate the triplet regimen.
Excellent. I think we should now shift gears and talk a little bit about treatment choices for MSI-high metastatic colorectal cancer. So there are a couple of trials that I would summarize. The KEYNOTE-177, where pembrolizumab was compared to outcomes of investigator choice chemotherapy for MSI-high deficient mismatch repair metastatic CRC. And this trial demonstrated a significantly improved progression-free survival at 12 months was 55%. And was 48% at 24 months compared to chemotherapy alone. But a note about this trial, the mismatch repair status was not confirmed centrally. Basically the individual laboratories had sent their results and that was used for the analysis. However, in the subsequent CheckMate 8HW, where nivolumab and ipilimumab versus nivo versus investigator choice chemotherapy was used for MSI-high mCRC. In this case, the results show that even greater improvement in progression-free survival when comparing nivo-ipi combination with the chemotherapy arm. And in part, this might be due to the fact that tumors were centrally confirmed for their DNA mismatch repair status. Even though it's a very widely available test, it can be tricky in some cases. And there's a good number of reasons for falsely overcalling MSI if the stain is a bit weak and things of technical issues of that nature. So, you know, the testing again comes in as a very important aspect of interpreting trial results.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it gives us pause because, you know, we have this tendency if we send a test to believe the result, but clearly all these investigators did as well. And central confirmation did not confirm all of them, it was about 84%. So I will say in my own practice, what I've been doing is if we do get a rapid IHC to try to get the test done quicker, we'll also send NGS just to make sure that we're confirming, because certainly we've seen rare errors that happen in between. And this is one of those cases you don't want to miss any of them. And you also don't want to give immunotherapy to a microsatellite stable patient because it's probably not going to work. So thankfully, we have other patients that we can also give immunotherapy to, though it's uncommon. But we have our ultra-hypermutated cancers. And so this is not a huge proportion, maybe 2 to 8% of colorectal cancer. But this is due to somatic changes in POL-E or POL-D1. And they get much higher mutation burden. So if we say that MSI has a tumor mutation burden in the 20s, let's say, or for mutations for megabase. For POL-E and POL-D1, they may have a tumor mutation burden well above 100. And what's interesting is that these patients are typically microsatellite stable. So again, we don't want to miss these patients because even though they're uncommon, they get markedly good responses to immunotherapy and probably even better than an MSI high case. And so it, again, I think supports at least my local strategy of doing MSI testing with tumor mutation burden by next-generation sequencing on all my patients, just because absolutely we don't want to miss these patients. They're a great opportunity for a highly effective therapy.
Moving on to refractory disease, could you talk about the treatment options available for that?
Yeah, so that's where we have multiple drugs, but I would say the clinical benefit's not going to be as extreme. So the three drugs in this space that we think about are regorafenib, trifluridine tipiracil, and fruquintinib. And so each of these was originally approved versus placebo in large randomized studies. But the degree of clinical benefit was on the order of weeks, not months. So regorafenib was a PFS of 1.9 versus 1.7 months, and similar sort of benefit for TAS-102 by itself. But then we learned that it could be combined with bevacizumab. And so now a more standard combination is trifluridine tipiracil with bevacizumab. And there, the progression-free survival increased to 5.6 months. So this is not a huge magnitude, but compared to what single-agent monotherapy would be, it was considered to be quite meaningful and practice-changing. So as, you know, we counsel patients, we talk about sort of the fact that there is a more limited benefit in this stage of treatment, but that we still can, potentially improve survival versus doing nothing at all. The newest kid on the block is fruquintinib that came after the FRESCO-2 study, which showed both a progression-free and overall survival benefit versus placebo, though notably patients had to be on either regorafenib or trifluridine tipiracil or have had both in the past. But when the FDA approved fruquintinib for use, it approved it in the third or fourth line, so it does not actually require that patients have been on this before. So a limitation of all of these regimens is both an advantage and a disadvantage is that they are oral. And so for patients who are regularly able to take pills and can remember their pills, that's a great option. They might want time off the 5-FU pump, but that is difficult for some folks with GI issues. Another potential limitation is there's a lot of targeting of the VEGF pathway. So regorafenib, fruquintinib, and bevacizumab, if you use the TAS-102 with that, are all going to hit VEGF. So in the patient that perhaps had an obstruction or has a fistula or has a contraindication, you're going to have much more limited options there. So we are lucky to have medications, but I would say it is a little bit tricky at this point in the disease.
Let's talk about targeted treatments for specific mutations. And Dr. Sepulveda, do you want to start with maybe the Beacon trial?
Yes. So very importantly, as we know, metastatic BRAF mutant colorectal cancer, MSS, usually are difficult cancers. And prognosis has been dismal for those patients. So there has been a great need of developments in that area. So BRAF mutation is seen in about 8 to 12% of colorectal cancers. And in particular, the BRAF V600E is targetable. And the combination of encorafenib and cetuximab was studied in the Beacon trial, testing as doublet or as triplet therapy. In the updated analysis for the 665 randomized patients, the triplet and doublet arms demonstrated improved overall survival and objective response rates in BRAF V600E mutant colorectal cancer compared with current standard of care chemotherapy. So this is certainly a win for our patients with this specific mutation. And obviously, we need to know that particular mutation before we start therapy.
Dr. Cohen, I know you mentioned Breakwater in our previous podcast as well, and I think this is, we have some brand new data from ASCO this year. Would you like to share the new data?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, if we say that MSI is a hard stop before starting therapy, BRAF is close on its heels. So the Breakwater study was a landmark first-line trial using BRAF-targeted therapy. Patients could have the novel combination encorafenib, cetuximab with FOLFOX. Some patients also just got the targeted combination of encorafenib, cetuximab, and then patients could have been on standard of care as part of the randomization. At this point, only the EC and FOLFOX arm has been released, and so we expect later data to come with EC FOLFIRI. But what was incredible about this was that we saw markedly improved progression-free survival with the combination EC FOLFOX versus standard of care, and it exceeded that of the targeted therapy alone. So there's definitely some synergism going on there. But what really led to a gasp in the audience and striking results was the fact that the overall survival observed in the EC FOLFOX arm was comparative to what we see for non-BRAF mutated cancers at 30 months. And so this has not yet been documented because previously we always would talk about BRAF as being a poor prognostic cancer and also one where it was predicted to not respond as well to other therapies. So the fact that this combination could potentially overcome this, albeit with the caveat that these were generally healthier patients in a clinical trial, it was just really, really wonderful to see. So this has now launched itself very much into standard of care, FOLFOX, encorafenib, and cetuximab for first-line therapy of BRAF mutant microsatellite stable cancer. But Antonio, maybe you could talk a little bit more about KRAS G12C.
So finally, KRAS becomes like the new kid in the block. We know that KRAS is one of the most frequent actionable mutations or pathways in colorectal cancer, but excluding some lines of therapy. So about 45% of colorectal cancers will carry a mutation in KRAS and or other RAS genes, and RAS in particular. But KRAS G12C is rare in colorectal cancer and is seen as about 3 to 4% of these patients. Following on the success in other tumor types like lung cancer, using specific targeting of G12C mutations, the KRYSTAL-1 trial combined adagrasib with cetuximab specifically for KRAS-12C metastatic colorectal cancer and received accelerated FDA approval for second or third line therapy, showing objective response rates of 34%, progression-free survival at 6.9 months, and overall survival of 15.9 months. So even though it impacts a small percentage of colorectal cancers, it's quite important that this area is developing and making progress.
And we have a few minutes to go. So can we, you know, I'd like to discuss any other mutations that you think are relevant, any other important drugs you think we should cover for maybe KRAS mutations, Dr. Cohen?
So we also have sotorasib and panitumumab, where they released some new data at ASCO, but that those trials are really moving along nicely. So there's phase three data looking at different doses of sotorasib with panitumumab, again, compared to standard of care, showing markedly improved progression-free survival in terms of the sotorasib-panitumumab combination versus standard of care. And these trials are moving into the first line. And I think that's what's exciting about our new targets is just as we saw BRAF get established in the second line and then move to the first line and show synergy with chemotherapy, we're all excited to see if that's going to be true of some of these other targets. And so currently only available in a trial, but I would say that that's where I see the trends of KRAS G12C. And then further trials are really needed because we've got KRAS G12D and a host of other KRAS and NRAS mutations that are being evaluated with different inhibitors. So going from the undruggable target to now having new standards of care, it's a pretty exciting area in colorectal cancer. And I guess let's not overlook HER2 because we have therapies approved for HER2 as well. So I would say the combination that I typically start with would be trastuzumab to tucatinib, currently only approved in second line and beyond. And these agents are highly effective in combination, but only for patients who truly are overexpressing HER2. So we are looking at not just NGS in this situation. Typically here, we're actually looking at IHC and FISH because the data suggests that if someone is IHC 3+ for HER2, they're going to have the best results. Secondarily, if they're 2+ and FISH positive, those patients might also receive benefit, but there's not really benefit for low expressing HER2. However, if you do have a high expressor, the combination of trastuzumab and tucatinib has been also very impressive in terms of the survival and is also being now evaluated in combination with chemotherapy in the first line as part of a clinical trial. But at this point, I would only use trastuzumab, tucatinib, second line and beyond.
Thank you so much. Well, this podcast has been chock full of information, but we've run out of time. I would like to thank our experts, Dr. Cohen and Dr. Sepulveda, for taking time to speak with us today. And thanks to all our listeners for joining us. Hopefully, you're able to tune in to some other podcasts in this series. There are a total of two, as well as some of the many other types of CME programs we offer. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group, who in support of improving patient care is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, ACCME, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, ACPE, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center, ANCC, to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Pfizer Inc., who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thank you.